Chapter 7. Kiss. Tastes are different, little man. Madam Tusher is attached to my lady, having been her waiting woman, before she was married, in the old lord's time. She married Dr. Tusher the chaplain. The English household divines often marry the waiting women. You will not marry the French woman, will you? I saw her laughing with Blaze in the buttery. I belong to a church that is older and better than the English church, Mr. Holt said, making a sign whereof Esmond did not then understand the meaning, across his breast and forehead. In our church the clergy do not marry. You will understand these things better soon. Was not St. Peter the head of your church? Dr. Rabbits of Ealing told us so. The father said, yes, he was. But St. Peter was married, for we heard only last Sunday that his wife's mother lay sick of a fever. On which the father again laughed, and said he would understand this too better soon, and talked of other things, and took away Harry Esmond, and showed him the great old house which he had come to inhabit. It stood on a rising green hill, with woods behind it, in which were rooks' nests, where the birds at morning and returning home at evening made a great cawing. At the foot of the hill was a river, with a steep ancient bridge crossing it, and beyond that a large pleasant green flat, where the village of Castlewood stood, and stands, with the church in the midst, the parsonage hard by it, the inn with the blacksmith's forge beside it, and the sign of the three castles on the elm. The London road stretched away towards the rising sun, and to the west were swelling hills and peaks, behind which many a time Harry Esmond saw the same sun setting that he now looks on thousands of miles away across the great ocean in a new Castlewood, by another stream that bears, like the new country of wandering Aeneas, the fond names of the land of his youth. The hall of Castlewood was built with two courts, whereof one only, the fountain court, was now inhabited, the other having been battered down in the Cromwellian wars. In the fountain court, still in good repair, was the great hall, near to the kitchen and butteries. A dozen of living rooms looking to the north, and communicating with the little chapel that faced eastwards and the buildings stretching from that to the main gate, and with the hall which looked to the west, into the court now dismantled. This court had been the most magnificent of the two, until the Protector's cannon tore down one side of it before the place was taken and stormed. The besiegers entered at the terrace under the clock tower, slaying every man of the garrison, and at their head my lord's brother, Francis Esmond. The restoration did not bring enough money to the Lord Castlewood to restore this ruined part of his house, where were the morning parlors, above them the long music gallery, and before which stretched the garden terrace, where, however, the flowers grew again which the boots of the Roundheads had trodden in their assault, and which was restored without much cost, and only a little care, by both ladies who succeeded the second Viscount in the government of this mansion. Round the terrace garden was a low wall with a wicket leading to the wooded height beyond, that is called Cromwell's Battery to this day. Young Harry Esmond learned the domestic part of his duty, which was easy enough, from the groom of her ladyship's chamber. Serving the countess, as the custom commonly was in his boyhood, as page, waiting at her chair, bringing her scented water and the silver basin after dinner, sitting on her carriage step on state occasions, or on public days introducing her company to her. This was chiefly of the Catholic gentry, of whom there were a pretty many in the country and neighboring city, and who rode not seldom to Castlewood, to partake of the hospitalities there. In the second year of their residence, the company seemed especially to increase. My lord and my lady were seldom without visitors, in whose society it was curious to contrast the difference of behavior between Father Holt, the director of the family, and Dr. Tusher, the rector of the parish. Mr. Holt moving amongst the very highest as quite their equal, and as commanding them all, while poor Dr. Tusher, whose position was indeed a difficult one, having been chaplain once to the hall, and still to the Protestant servants there, seemed more like an usher than an equal, and always rose to go away after the first course. Also there came in these times to Father Holt many private visitors, whom, after a little, Henry Esmond had little difficulty in recognizing as ecclesiastics of the father's persuasion, whatever their dresses and they adopted all might be. These were closeted with the father constantly, and often came, and rode away without paying their devoirs to my lord and lady, to the lady and lord, rather his lordship being little more than a cipher in the house, and entirely under his domineering partner. A little fowling, a little hunting, a great deal of sleep, and a long dine at cards and table, carried through one day after another with his lordship. When meetings took place in this second year, which often would happen with closed doors, the page found my lord's sheet of paper scribbled over with dogs and horses, and 'twas said he had much ado to keep himself awake at these councils. The countess ruling over them, and he acting as little more than her secretary. Father Holt began speedily to be so much occupied with these meetings as rather to neglect the education of the little lad who so gladly put himself under the kind priest's orders. At first they read much and regularly, both in Latin and French, the father not neglecting in anything to impress his faith upon his pupil, but not forcing him violently, and treating him with a delicacy and kindness which surprised and attached the child, always more easily won by these methods than by any severe exercise of authority. And his delight in their walks was to tell Harry of the glories of his order, of its martyrs and heroes, of its brethren converting the heathen by myriads, traversing the desert, facing the stake, ruling the courts and councils, or braving the tortures of kings, so that Harry Esmond thought that to belong to the Jesuits was the greatest prize of life and bravest end of ambition, the greatest career here, and in heaven the surest reward, and began to long for the day, not only when he should enter into the one church and receive his first communion, but when he might join that wonderful brotherhood, which was present throughout all the world, and which numbered the wisest, the bravest, the highest born, the most eloquent of men among its members. Father Holt bade him keep his views secret, and to hide them as a great treasure which would escape him if it was revealed, and, proud of this confidence and secret vested in him, the lad became fondly attached to the master who initiated him into a mystery so wonderful and awful. And when little Tom Tusher, his neighbor, came from school for his holiday, and said how he too was to be bred up for an English priest, and would get what he called an exhibition from his school, and then a college scholarship and fellowship, and then a good living, it he asked young Harry Esmond's powers of reticence, not to say to his young companion, church, priesthood, fat living. My dear Tommy, do you call yours a church and a priesthood? What is a fat living compared to converting 100,000 heathens by a single sermon? What is a scholarship at Trinity by the side of a crown of martyrdom, with angels awaiting you as your head is taken off? Could your master at school sail over the Thames on his gown? Have you statues in your church that can bleed, speak, walk, and cry? My good Tommy, in dear Father Holt's church these things take place every day. You know St. Philip of the Willows appeared to Lord Castlewood, and caused him to turn to the one true church. No saints ever come to you. And Harry Esmond, because of his promise to Father Holt, hiding away these treasures of faith from T. Tusher, delivered himself of them nevertheless simply to Father Holt, who stroked his head, smiled at him with his inscrutable look, and told him that he did well to meditate on these great things, and not to talk of them except under direction. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.